It's Nightside with Dan Ray on WBZ, Boston's news radio.
Well, welcome back, everybody, as we work our way through a Friday night, towards midnight and towards Saturday morning. Tough weather day here in New England, that's for sure, but it is looking like it's going to get better, a little cooler as the weekend goes on. And as the weather cools down, political anger in this country has continued to heat up over the last 20 years, maybe more. It's always been disagreements in this country, but we have reached a boiling point, I think. And as a consequence of that, there's a couple of things that are going on right now. Steve Bannon was indicted today for contempt of Congress for not showing up to answer questions about the events of leading up to January 6th. Out in Wisconsin, we're going to talk a little bit later about the Kyle Rittenhouse trial, and police in Kenosha and Chicago are on standby alert. Many of them have been told to be available 24/7 in case of riots in the wake of the Rittenhouse verdict, which is expected to come down sometime next week. We remember the summer of 2020 and American cities burning, and it's a very difficult time here in America. The threats are made back and forth, violence is engaged in, and I'm delighted to be joined tonight by an American scholar. He actually is the president of the National Association of Scholars, a former professor of anthropology and college provost. He's been a guest before, Peter W. Wood. Peter Wood has just written a book entitled Wrath, America Enraged. Peter Wood, welcome back to Nightside. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you, Dan.
This book, we talked earlier, you reminded me, follows on a book that you wrote 15 years ago, A Bee in the Mouth, Anger in America Now, which was written in 2006 in sort of the wake of the re-election of George W. Bush in 2004. Things are not getting better in terms of dialogue and conversation. Let's take the 30,000-foot view. Has it ever been this worse? I mean, obviously we had a civil war. I get it. Other than the civil war, has it ever been? Have friendships, more friendships, ever been strained? I have friends of mine who tell me they can't talk to former friends with whom they disagree politically. How do we get to this situation?
Well, we got to this situation over a long period. The thesis of that book that I wrote 15 years ago was that self-restraint had been breaking down in America for a long time. There was a time within living memory for at least some people that Americans were raised who have an ethic of self-control, and that letting your anger get the best of you was a sign of personal weakness. So we held up as our ideals people who had mastered their anger, who could certainly get angry, but who understood that the better path was to control it and make wise decisions. We began letting go of that as long ago as the 1950s, where the idea began to take hold that anger was empowering, that to be an authentic person was to realize your emotions and put them into action, that holding back your anger was likely to become a neurosis, so it was much better to be expressive. That didn't really sweep through American culture all at once, but as it entered into the way we raise our children, it eventually became an idea that this was perfectly good. So by the 1970s, we were getting movies in which the lead characters were no longer the strong, silent type. They were the vituperative, angry type. By the 1980s, our sports heroes were people like McEnroe, who would throw his racket and scream at the umpires. American culture licensed itself to get angry. Now, it was somewhat remarkable that anger didn't really enter into our politics. To remember back to the Reagan era, Reagan disagreed strongly with President Carter at the time, but they weren't screaming at each other, and their supporters weren't treating each other like dirt. That has given way in the decades since then to this style of being angry all the time. Now, there's an anger on the left and an anger on the right. They're not exactly the same thing. They're not exactly symmetrical. I would say the American left grew angry in a really ostentatious way, following the Bush-Gore election and a sense that an angry style of being was the way in which you could get heard and noticed. So this coincided with the rise of the internet and social media, where people could spout off all the time and try to get a rise out of each other. So anger became a competitive sport, at least on the left. The right has been more conflicted about anger. Certainly the anger is there, but it often comes into collision with other values that conservatives hold dear. So it's not such a wise idea to be spouting off with your anger all the time if you're trying to raise a family, if you're trying to hold a job, if you're trying to go to church. So this complicated sense of being not really right with being angry has created a different sort of rage on the right. All of this has come into full flower during the Trump years, in which the left became just unhinged with its hatred of Trump. And then with the election of 2020 and the sense among many millions of Americans that there was something not quite right about that election, followed by the January 6th riot at the Capitol, which was soon recast as an insurrection, the right began to feel just disempowered, that there was no place in which its anger could be expressed through mainstream media or through the courts. And that being sort of cornered to be angry with no way to get it out has given us this current situation, where I think we have a standoff between a left that has made a lifestyle out of being angry and demeaning the opponents, and the right feeling that it's been isolated and is pent up with its rage, has given us a situation that is every bit as fraught as the beginning of the Civil War in 1861. I do think we can look to the American past, way back to colonial times, when people were raised with an ethic that, yes, you can be righteously angry, but you have to find a way to channel it productively. It hasn't always worked. People held duels. They fought each other. There were riots. But it didn't change the overriding sense that the right way to lead your life was peacefully. That's changed now, and a lot of people don't believe that the right way to lead your life is peacefully.
Well, let me just for a second, just jump in here for a second. The two, I think, greatest presidents of the 20th century, first half Roosevelt, second half Reagan, that's my view. Both of them were considered sort of happy warriors. I mean,
yes.
And I would think that American political leaders, I mean, this fellow who just won in Virginia, Glenn Youngkins, I did not follow that closely. I followed it as closely as anybody who reads, you know, newspapers and follows the news. He came across as a pretty likable guy. And I think that helped him. Donald Trump came across as churlish. He came across as a narcissist. There were many of his programs which were really helpful towards minority groups, and he did better amongst minority voters in 2020 than he did in 2016. But he lost ground, according to the polls that I have seen, not only amongst women voters, but white women voters, and also, believe it or not, lost ground amongst white men. In 2020. I don't know if you've seen those same polls. Yes. The point that I'm trying to make is that I think the American public doesn't react well to anger, nor should they. And someone has to be smart enough on both sides of the divide. Terry McAuliffe came across as an angry candidate running against Glenn Youngkins, telling parents that they had no right to be involved in what the curriculum was for their kids in school. Well, parents didn't like that. So I want to amplify on this, but I also, when we come back, I would like you tell one story in the book about the Pennsylvania neighbors who got in an argument over snow shoveling. I'd like to come back to that and not take it away from politics, but make the point of how this anger has sort of like seeped into our culture. I got to take a break. My guest is Peter Wood. He's an author. He's a scholar. He's, as a matter of fact, the president of the National Association of Scholars. He's an author and a writer and a thinker. His book, Wrath, America Enraged. We talk about this a lot on Nightside. I want to invite callers to join the conversation. I think that Peter has laid it out exquisitely in this first segment, the premise of the book and what he's concerned about. And feel free to join the conversation. We will contemporize it, talk about what might happen in the wake of the high-profile trial that's going on in Wisconsin, which apparently will come to a climax next week when the jurors render a verdict. And we'll keep this conversation going, and we'll probably get into the Rittenhouse trial a little bit later on tonight. So this is a night when hopefully we can get people on both sides of the equation, both sides of the great divide, to talk and talk in language that everyone can agree on. 617-254-1030, 888-929-1030, ladies line, 617-931-1030. Quick break, back with Peter Wood, his book, Wrath, America Enraged.
It's Nightside with Dan Ray on WBZ, Boston's news radio.
My guest is Peter Wood. His book is Wrath, America Enraged. You used, the first chapter, this story about a couple in February of 2021. They argued, a couple and a neighbor, argued over snow shoveling. Didn't go well, did it?
No, the couple, that's James and Lisa Goy, had been shoveling a space for their car. Their neighbor, Mr. Spade, was trying to shovel his snow as well, and they were throwing snow on each other's parking spot. Mr. Spade got angry, so did the Goys. They traded a lot of vulgar insults. We know all this because, of course, like everywhere else in America, cameras were running. It got out of hand. Mr. Spade went into his house, came out with a gun, and shot both the Goys, and, in fact, continued shooting Mrs. Goy several times beyond her death. Then he went back to his house and killed himself. That's the whole story. But
yeah, so nobody had to worry about where they parked their car as a result of that confrontation.
Right, they're all dead.
Yeah.
Well, no, Mr. Goy survived, but the story here is one of just petty annoyance escalating through verbal abuse to the point where somebody loses it and, you know, firearms are nearby and off he goes. That's certainly a kind of rage that we've grown familiar with headlines all over the place, where people just lack the capacity to see things in perspective or to cool it for just a moment to realize, is this worth it? I mean, we end two lives on the basis of a snow shoveling incident.
Yeah.
So, you know, that is part of American culture now. It's not like we've never known violence in the past, but what we've got now is a whole vocabulary for this. We call it going postal, which, you know, goes back to the 1980s when a postal carrier brought a gun into the post office and shot some of his coworkers.
Yeah.
Now we call it workplace violence, and it's not so uncommon. Every year there's a dozen or more such instances of that sort of thing. I mean, we should ask, you know, why is that? Why is it that we can't resolve our disappointments and our dissatisfactions in something short of hurling them into the world of violent confrontation?
Well, what I'm really interested in, and obviously you look at a story like that, or you think about the people who get into a road rage incident. I remember when I was a television reporter a few years ago, I remember covering a story where a couple of people were giving each other a hard time on a road, a major road. I think it was Route 95, which runs up and down the East Coast here in the greater Boston area. And the two of them, you know, were gesturing at one another. This goes back maybe 20 years. And they pulled off into a parking area, a rest stop, and in order to duke it out. And one guy jumped out of the car. The other guy, who was older, reached into the trunk of his car, and he pulled out a crossbow.
And oh my goodness.
He fired the crossbow, and the guy was dead. The other guy was dead. Now, I imagine that when they pulled off the side of the road, the last thing that the guy who was about to die thought was, this guy's going to pull a crossbow out of the trunk of his car. I mean, right. You might have been thinking a gun, you might have been thinking a knife, but a crossbow? And so what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to take this beyond these incidents of bizarre behavior, which occur with all too frequency, which all too great a frequency, and I'm trying to project it onto the political landscape, which I think you deal with a lot, and that is that, you know, we've had a summer in 2020 of burning buildings over the murder of an individual in Minnesota. Most of the people whose buildings were burned down were people who happened to be black, poor store owners. We had this scene last January, which was, you know, just horrific to watch. And each then plays politics with it. How do we get out of this spiral? I mean, or is this the spiral? We are going to spiral down into some sort of really nasty confrontation. Not the Civil War, maybe, but more in that direction. Or am I totally off base when I ask that question of you?
You're not off base at all. I think the potential is there for this to spiral down into a really bad place. And there are hotheads on both sides, the political division, who want that to happen. On one side, there are people on the left who are actually rather eager for the people on the right to break out and do something nasty, which would then excuse further oppression, further authoritarian government. There are people on the right who are just itching to pick up their AR-14s and go to town on the people they think are pushing them around. Where we are is not quite at that point where things are going to break down. But as you brought up the Rittenhouse trial a few times, we know that Antifa, Black Lives Matter, other groups on the left are perfectly ready to reenact, maybe at a smaller scale, but reenact the riots of the summer of 2020. Their weapon of choice is to burn cars, loot buildings, set fire to whole sections of small towns like Kenosha, and expect that the American press is going to cover for them by calling it peaceful protest or just turning a blind eye to it. So if that were to happen this time around, I think there probably will be bullets flying back in the other direction. That is, Americans had their taste of a wholly lawless summer in which the civil authorities, the police, and so on did very little to contain it, and we're fed up with that. So I think the risk is there. There is a red line that could be crossed, and we need to really pull ourselves back from that and say, do we want this? Well, most of us don't, but most of us aren't controlling the situation. So we do have to look to our political leadership, left and right, to move in on this and say there's a better way to handle these disagreements. I'm among those who think that Rittenhouse defended himself fairly. I watched the videos. He was facing the threat of death at the hands of these thugs, and he acted overall in a rather measured way. He didn't go around shooting people at random. He shot people who were assaulting him. But that's not the story that a great many Americans are hearing. That's not what gets played on MSNBC or CNN. There, the story is told that he's just this right-wing crazy who was out shooting people for the hell of it. And the powder keg has been more than primed for an explosion on this when the verdict comes down that Rittenhouse is innocent. And that's fully what I expect the verdict to be.
Yeah, the verdict won't be innocent, but it could very well be not guilty.
Right, not guilty.
And I always, as a lawyer, I always like to make that distinction for people, and I think it's an important distinction because no jury comes back and says innocent. They come back and say not guilty, and that the prosecution failed to prove all the elements of a crime beyond a reasonable doubt. Peter Wood is my guest. Peter, I want to get to phone calls, so we have to take a quick news break, and I want to incorporate some of my listeners who have views on this as well. I think you have identified the problem precisely, and I do think there are people on both sides who would love to have at it. We saw, again, some of them on January 6th, and we saw a lot of them in the summer of 2020, and they kind of live off each other to some extent. There's this weird relationship where the crazier one side gets, the other side picks it up. So let's continue the conversation. 617-254-1030, 888-929-1030. The book is a good read. I have not read it in its entirety, but I have read a good portions of it. It's entitled Wrath, America Enraged, Peter W. Wood. And if we continue down this path, this spiral down, we're going to find ourselves in a very, very, very bad place in this country. And I don't know what the secret sauce is to turn it around. And maybe Peter will be able to give us some more comments and ideas on the other side of the break. But I do want to incorporate phone calls, so feel free to join the conversation back on Nightside with phone calls and more conversation with Peter Wood, the author of Wrath, America Enraged. So true. Back after this.
Nightside with Dan Ray on WBZ, Boston's News Radio.
My guest is Peter Wood. His book, Wrath, America Enraged. Peter, I want to continue our conversation, but I also want to incorporate the callers, if that's okay with you.
Please.
Okay, let's go first up to Doug in Salem, who's been holding on for quite a while. Hi, Doug. Welcome. You're first this hour on Nightside with Peter Wood. Go right ahead, Doug.
Thanks so much. Appreciate it. Mr. Wood, thanks so much for being on the show tonight. Appreciate it. And to be honest, I actually was not sure of your name, and I wasn't sure of your background. So as I was listening, I went up and I did some research, and I certainly was happy to see some of the things that that you've published and some of the writings that you've had. So I'm looking forward to getting that book and reading a little bit more. But going to the point, I think, of what we're trying to get to or what you were talking about, you know, I'm only 49, and I remember growing up, you know, seeing Reagan and Tip O'Neill. And even later on, I remember seeing even Clinton and Gingrich together. And I don't mean to go presidential immediately like that, but what I think is exemplary of where we are now and some of the things that you just said as an example versus where we were when I was younger, we didn't have that instant feedback or that instant reaction mechanism like we do now with cell phones and Twitter and Facebook, et cetera, like that. I think that allows that knee-jerk reaction to kind of fester and take hold kind of in that popularism type response. But, you know, I remember seeing that and saying, you know, what would temp down the fervor? And I think some of it really does just come down from leading by example, whether it's at the local level, at the national level. And, you know, I just think if people were able to, like, I could never see, as an example, Donald Trump saying to Nancy Pelosi, you know, I really like everything that you do, even though we have policy differences. That probably wouldn't happen. But, you know, you saw that. I saw that growing up with a lot of political leaders. And I think it's because at some point, even though they certainly had their own drive to do what they wanted to do, they also recognized the fact that they couldn't go it alone. Whereas now, you're almost applauded, you're almost celebrated by going it alone and trying to hold up ideals, no matter how irrelevant or possible those ideals may be to come at some point. So, you know, I would invite folks, since I just did this as Dan was talking with Mr. Wood, I happen to find something, The Architecture of Intellectual Freedom, and in that, I know it's more educational based, but you were talking about Declaration of Principles, and I just thought some of the things you said in terms of intellectual freedom, which I think now is almost not allowed, you know, and I've seen that in a lot of things. But again, I think the popularism of social media certainly doesn't help. And I'm not trying to inflate Dan by any stretch, but, you know, as someone who grew up in the area, who I think a lot of us who listen to the radio show know, you know, Dan's a straight shooter. And like Dan said before, I think the people that listen and call into his show, I think this is really the majority of people, not just in the community, but in the country. But these are also the people, I think, who don't necessarily pay attention to the extreme. So You know, Dan, I think it's two ways. I think it's you, the way you lead the conversations, certainly the callers and the guests that you have. And, you know, I think it's just an honest outpouring of these are the things that we believe in. These are the things we think, for better or worse. And certainly we can discuss it. So anyway, I don't want to take the whole night.
No. Don't run. Yeah, don't run yet, Doug. Because look, we have seen things in the last few years. I mean, look, there were riots in this country. Peter Wood will remember them as well as I do in the 1960s over racial strife. There were assassinations in this country, which obviously three major assassinations. President Kennedy, Robert Kennedy, Dr. Martin Luther King, which exacerbated all of that. There have been other assassinations along the way. You know, Malcolm X, Congressman Lowenstein in New York. So we've had tumultuous times, but now we had open, I mean, rioting last summer, and the police, they abandoned police stations. You know, and not that they had a choice, but I never thought that I would see that. There were mayors and governors that did not want support of, you know, troops, state police support, and the governor of Wisconsin, who I think allowed that Kenosha situation. Again, I don't want to get into the blame game here, but I think there's been some lack of leadership. Peter Wood, can you jump in with us on this for a moment?
Sure. Doug, I think, made a series of excellent points. I'm not going to be able to cover all of them, but the presence of social media has been an accelerant to all this. Whatever immediate feelings people have are now translated into efforts to arouse other people, and that creates this cycle of instant stimulation, which is certainly a part of this picture. I try to cover that in the book, but you know, it's a major piece of it. Trump has come into this several times, so I want to sort of lay my cards on the table there. I think, Dan, your depiction of him is correct. He is a man who doesn't easily sit down and talk with the other side, so there's no model there of a man who can assuage anger. In fact, he himself will say that he has a capacity to arouse anger in other people. And where all the good things that he did as president are on one side of the ledger, there's this other side, which is he's not been good for the American temperament. He has exacerbated bad tendencies. But the same thing is absolutely true of Nancy Pelosi and other people on the left. So we are in this polarization now that is, I think, more extreme than any time since the Civil War. That's not to gainsay that there were race riots as far back as the 1930s and 40s. We were dealing with moments in which civil order broke down. But we've never been in, for a long, long time, in a situation where the civil authorities in Portland, Oregon, or Seattle, or Kenosha have simply stood down and let the extremists on one side take over and do whatever they wanted, nor have we been in a situation where the public press has been essentially turning a blind eye to that or excusing it as mostly peaceful protest. That kind of stuff on one side of the ledger has its reciprocal reaction on the other side of people who want to lead their quiet lives and get on with things, not being allowed to. You're not really able to sit back and enjoy your life if you're in ever-present danger of the kinds of angry reprisal that occurs day in and day out. I lived in Boston for 25 years. I'm now in New York City. But in New York City, I'm surrounded by a city where it's hard to walk down the block without fear of being pushed or shoved or knifed. It's a kind of breakdown of ordinary social order that I've not seen in my whole life before.
Well, hopefully that's going to change with your new mayor. By the way, just I don't want to let Pelosi off the hook. I think Pelosi has been an extraordinarily divisive leader for the Democratic Party, even as she tried to pull in the total crazies of the Democratic Party. I remember when it was Congressman Joe Wilson from South Carolina who mm-hmm. made the mistake of yelling liar from the House floor, from the floor of the House of Representatives during a speech that President Obama was given.
It was "you lie" is what he said.
You lie, right. And the media appropriately responded to that lack of decorum on the part of Wilson. Yet when Nancy Pelosi stood behind the President of the United States and mockingly clapped in his face and then ripped up his State of the Union address, I didn't hear any criticism from the mainstream media. I didn't hear any criticism from the Boston Globe or the New York Times or the LA Times or the Washington Post. And I think that is a classic example of the dual standard that the mainstream media has held misbehavior by both party leaders to. And they have given a wide pass and a wide berth to actions and statements and fact checks which were never made of many of the Democratic leaders. Quick comment from both of you, if you'd like, on that.
Well, I'll throw
the
in the
comment. I apologize. Go ahead, Mr. Wood.
Go ahead. No, you should go ahead.
I was just going to say, and I'll make sure I log off of these other callers. I just wanted to say, for someone with your background and your experience, and Dan, I would invite you as well. I'm not sure why you're hesitant, but you know, for both of you, leadership to me is not something that's better than anything else, but it's a skill, and it's developed over a lifetime. And certain people have it, and certain people don't have it. And it's okay if you don't have it, and it's okay if you do have it. But I think for people who have that integrity of thought, who have that discipline of mind in terms of understanding what they think may not always be the best and to seek out advice and counsel. And I think both of you have that skill. I would certainly invite both of you to think about those types of positions. Mr. Wood, I know you've been in Washington before, and I know you're there last, I think it was last September, there was an American History Conference, I believe, that you were at. And, you know, I think for folks like both of you who have that level of thought, that's something that other people can only benefit from. So that would be the last thing that I would say.
Doug, I appreciate it.
And thanks so much.
Please keep calling the program, Doug. Thank you. Peter, quick comment, if you would, on my comment on Pelosi. I didn't want you to think I was giving Pelosi a pass, okay?
No, I didn't. My only comment on this is that leadership is a necessary ingredient here, but most of the leadership right now has been in the vein of further acceleration. There is political advantage. There almost always is political advantage, I should put that, in playing to the extremes. It's more colorful. It's more exciting. It attracts public attention in a way that councils of moderation just don't. So I understand why our political leaders are drawn to a style that is angry and demonstrative, even if that doesn't work well for the country. The missing ingredient there, I would say, is statesmanship. Statesmanship realizes that immediate advantage for yourself or your party is not for the best advantage of your country. And therein, we are suffering a real deficit of actual statesmanship on all political parties.
On that point, we've got to take a quick break. I'm going to get to Lee and Mark, I promise. And we spent a lot of time with Doug, but Lee, Mark, you'll be up next right after this break with my guest, Peter Wood, the author of Wrath, America Enraged. Coming back on Nightside.
You're on Nightside with Dan Ray on WBZ, Boston's news radio.
All of a sudden, Peter, our lines are full, so we'll try to get everybody in here. I'm not sure if we get everyone in, but let's try. Lee in Boston. Lee, I'm going to ask you to be as quick as you can with comment or question for Peter Wood. Go right ahead.
Okay, first of all, a question. Since the Rittenhouse case came up, I've been assuming there was no racial element. Am I incorrect?
There's no racial element in that the shooter and the victims were all white. That's correct.
Okay, fine. That's secondly, I think our problem is we do not have any respect for law, which may sound sort of basic, but there are no lawyers for people to deal with problems in a civil fashion. We only provide lawyers as a right to a defense. So you get what you pay for.
Okay.
I mean, I've been, for 30 years, I've been wondering about this. Why don't we give people civil lawyers? It's cost effective. And lawyers think I'm crazy.
Well, most civil cases, lawyers, many civil cases, lawyers will take those cases on a retainer, on a contingency basis.
Excuse me, but that only applies if there's somebody there who has the funds.
No, excuse me, Lee. What I'm saying is, if you have a case that's a good case, that's going to result in an award for you, most lawyers are more than willing to take a part of that case.
I'm not talking about an award. I just want somebody to do what they're supposed to do, or to stop, getting on my back about something. These are things that don't involve large sums of money. Whenever I fall and I break a bone, there's always a lawyer to help me with that one.
Yeah. So, but if you're having a dispute with a landlord, or you're having a dispute with a neighbor over the level of their television, the decibel level of their television is set at night, do you expect the government to give you both lawyers to battle that out? Is that where you're going with this?
Well,
I'm a little confused.
Well, I put it this way. Yep. If I blow my lawyer's brains out, I get the right to a defense, right?
As an indigent criminal defendant, you have a right to a lawyer, correct?
Okay, so why doesn't my government simply provide me with a lawyer to sue that neighbor? It's infinitely
because,
more civilized, right?
Well, it is more civilized. You're correct, but there's an extent to which the government is going to pay for other people's lawyers. That's all, I guess.
But
we'll discuss this.
Effective. But that's my particular view as to why everything is the way it is. But
all right, okay.
What does Professor Wood think about that?
Professor Wood, quickly, if you could. Lawyers for people in civil lawsuits in America. Is that the next step we should provide people with in this country?
I think that would be an escalation and wrongheaded. Small disputes should be handled by adults being able to talk with one another, and if that breaks down, arbitration might be a suitable step. But trying to lawyer up small disputes would only create more antagonism in a society that is already fraught with an excess of antagonism. So I disagree with the caller.
All right.
Oh,
okay.
Okay.
Well, thanks, Lee. Lee, call me again
some
night when you open lines. I would love to explore that conversation with you. I really would, okay?
Okay, thank you.
Thanks, Lee. Have a great night. Good night. Okay, let me get Lenny in Natick. Lenny, next on Nightside with Peter Wood. Go ahead, Lenny.
Hi, Dan, and hi, Professor Wood. Professor Wood, I have a question about the issue that comes up so frequently in terms of term limits in politics, and how term limits could ultimately change the whole outlook of the political landscape in terms of even with social media being. On the onset of being a part of this discussion, I was curious about your opinion on that, and why is it taking us so long as a society to get something like that passed?
Okay,
we only have about a minute and a half left in the hour, so whatever, whatever you can do here, Professor.
Okay. Term limits would have to be passed by the people who would be punished by them. So you don't find many legislatures that are willing to handcuff themselves with term limits. It's a mixed idea in any case, in that we do want to prevent people from making entire careers out of politics, but we also want to be able to draw on the experience of people who've been around the block a few times and understand how to make legislation pass. So it's a complicated question. I don't have a one-sided answer to it.
Yeah, whenever politicians talk about campaign reform, legislation. Remember, that generally is an incumbency protection act, okay? Well, right. Lenny, they don't function in any way except in their own best self-interest. Thanks, Len. I got to run.
Take care.
Professor Peter Wood, thank you. This was a great. We could have done 2 hours. Wrath, America Enraged. Peter, we'll have you back. Thank you so much, as always. And this book is available right now. Great Christmas present. Maybe people could give the book to someone on the other side of the family with whom they disagree, and that might start a conversation. What do you think?
I'm sure it will start some conversations and end others. But thanks for the plug.
Thank you very much, Peter Wood. We are going to talk about the Rittenhouse trial on the other side of the 10 o'clock news. If you're there and like to stick with us, feel free. We're coming back right after the 10.